Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. This episode is sponsored by our friends at Rapsodo. Rapsodo, the industry leader in baseball player development technology, has a special offer on their hitting and pitching 2.0 units. Go to rapsodo.com/rapsodo-savings and get up to $1,000 off. Trusted by the best in baseball, Rapsodo is used by all 30 MLB teams, 100% of Division I champions since 2010, and 100% of the top 100 prospects in this year's MLB draft. Scott Brown, Vanderbilt's pitching coach and associate head coach, had this to say about Rapsodo. Everyone involved in teaching pitchers this day and age could benefit from owning Rapsodo and using it for immediate feedback to educate their pitchers. Again, save up to $1,000 when you decide to train and build champions with Rapsodo. Visit rapsodo.com/savings and take advantage of this great offer. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. Continuing our Foundations for Optimal Living theme for this month on the ABCA podcast, CEO and founder of AIM 7, Dr. Eric Horam. Eric played football at Texas A&M, covered a lot of ground in the football world after graduating. He's traveled all over the world studying elite performance. He was in the NFL for 15 years as sports scientist and high performance director. He was at William & Mary for 2 years as associate athletics director for student athlete performance. And he also participated in the Presidential Leader Scholars Program. This episode is a deep dive into sleep and high performance. You can directly link mental and physical health issues to the lack of sleep. Conversely, you can also link high performance to quality sleep. This was also Dr. Corm's first experience with the ABCA convention, so we get his thoughts on how everything went. Let's welcome Dr. Eric Corm to the podcast. Before we get into the podcast, I wanted to send a thank you to everyone that attended the ABCA convention in Nashville. It was a record year with 8,500 participants and over 350 vendors. I feel like what makes our convention so special is that the attendees and the exhibitors are an organic part of the process. You really see it during the Q&As and the hot stoves. The ABCA staff is pumped about getting ready for Dallas in 2024. Thanks again for everyone's support. We're grateful for all of you. Here with Dr. Eric Corum, CEO and founder of AIM 7, social media at Eric Corum, hosts the Blueprint podcast. Been all over TikTok lately also, but we recorded in February 2021, and I am juiced that you wanted to come back because there's been so many advancements in the last 2 years on all of this.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. And I was thankful, very thankful to have just been at your conference. Wow. Like top notch, top to bottom. I hope I get an invite back in the future. It was amazing.
Yeah. And we talked about that a little bit, just kind of the difference between ours and maybe some of the other ones, just because we're kicking people's seasons off. We're not, coaches aren't worried about trying to find jobs at this point or if they had a tough season. So we are different than some of the other ones.
100%. I mean, the Q&A afterwards in the hallway, I didn't even make it to the Q&A room. And then the follow-up from the coaches, from the youth all the way to the pro level, it was just so refreshing. And what was really refreshing is 90% of the questions had nothing to do with like the X's and O's of winning. It was, how can we help these people? How can I help these kids? How can I help these players with the global picture of mental health and well-being and physical performance? And that was just, well, I want to help people win, because at the end of the day, that's how, you know, that's how we're judged. But having that thread through it was just really cool to see.
And I mentioned that after you were gone, you were heading to the Q&A section. The CDC numbers just came out for 2020. There was 47,000 suicides in 2020. And a lot of that has to do with lack of sleep. You know, and you hit home on that. Lack of sleep creates physical and mental health issues.
100%. When you're in a what's called a maladaptive state, you are unable to adapt to stress. And I think one thing that people need to understand is stress is one input. The body and the brain do not differentiate between physical and psychological stress. That's why physical burnout can lead to mental health issues. Mental health or mental psychological stress will inhibit physical output. And when you are not in a state where you can adapt to stress, then you kind of start spiraling out of control. And the research is very clear, you know, your mood suffers, you engage in self-destructive behaviors, and it's just a,
well, you talked about eating, you know, that was a big one that stuck out for me is if you're not getting the right amount of sleep, you're going to naturally gravitate to junk food.
Yeah, it impacts hormones called leptin and ghrelin, which are your hunger hormones. And I'm going to get this messed up here, but leptin is the one that signals to your brain that you are full, and it suppresses that signal. I believe the exact number is, if you sleep less than 7 hours chronically, you're going to overeat about 385 to 400 calories a day. You're going to snack more. That's about an eighth of a pound a week. And then you wonder why you're sleep deprived during the season, eating junk food. It's kind of what you crave. By the end of the year season, you're like, oh my gosh, I got to lose some weight.
And junk food is engineered for you to want to eat more. You know, that's the thing, that the food industry is extremely smart because it's cheap, but it's engineered so you actually want to eat more of it. It doesn't fill you up. It doesn't satiate you. It actually forces you to eat more of it.
100%. It's addictive.
And I like your reframing on this, that you're not shying away from stress. You're not going to be able to eliminate stress. This is a way to handle stress better.
Yes, 100%. The whole idea is this, is you can't manage stress. You can't manage the stock market. You can't manage what your players do when they leave the building. You can't manage your coaches. In a sense, we need to flip this on its head.
Yes.
And we want, instead of saying, hey, I want to manage stress, it's like, how do I build the capacity to take on more stress with less cost? And a visual representation is, if I had a bowl in my hands and that bowl represented all the stress that I could handle, and I filled it to the brim, and you said, Eric, walk quickly across the room. If I walked to the front and back of that auditorium, guess what? It would have spilt everywhere, right? It would have been a total mess. It's what happens when stress exceeds your capacity to adapt. Now, imagine I get a bowl that's as big, like both arms can go around it. I put the same level in. I could almost sprint to the back, and I would be fine. And that capacity is like your gas tank. And when that gas tank is full, guess what? As long as the car keeps working, you're going to get to your destination. But when we run out of gas, that's when bad things happen.
And I like, people are calling sleep a superpower now. It is because of human growth hormones and eliminating cortisol and resetting markers in your brain as you learn. Like all of those things, it is a superpower, sleep is.
100%. It's the golden chain that ties our health and human bodies together. That's Thomas Dekker from the 1700s. But 100%, you know, we talked about in the conference that there's an equation for growth: stress plus rest. And if you don't stress yourself, you're never going to get better. But the flip side of that is there's really, I was thinking about this on the plane back, to add into my talk then the future about this, is that stress plus rest, there's a 24-hour rhythm of stress and rest, and there's actually smaller rhythms in the day, ultradian rhythms, 90-minute, 120-minute cycles. But when you sleep at night, it's when your brain detoxifies itself, the stress systems are downregulated. So that's what we talked about. So cortisol goes down, your immune defenses are cranked up, growth hormone is secreted, testosterone is released, And it's when your brain detoxifies itself. I think I already said that, but that is like, we are finding, this is a new discovery in the past 15 years, the brain has its own detoxification system called the glymphatic system.
I love the research.
And through these unique
things
called the paravascular pathways, it's flushing out metabolic waste products only when you sleep. And one of those metabolic waste products is a protein called amyloid beta, which is directly related to neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And I think I mentioned statistics about how Alzheimer's is growing at such a rapid pace. I think by 2060, they're projecting that 14 million Americans will have Alzheimer's. And if you look, I just started going back and doing research. As Alzheimer's and neurodegenerative diseases have climbed, guess what's also declined? Nightly sleep. And now that we understand these detox systems, you're like, it's almost, I'm not going to say, well,
it's
I'm
an
pretty
epidemic.
Confident.
The suicide yes. rates and this, that's an epidemic. That's what's killing people.
It's bad.
Hey, with those 90-minute cycles throughout the day, when is the best time to maybe take a break or get away from activity?
Yeah, so there's something, Nathaniel Kleitman was a researcher that found that we sleep in 90-minute cycles at night. It's like 90 to 120 minutes. And he called this is the basic activity rest cycle. It's called an ultradian rhythm. During the day, you also have these peaks and valleys of energy in the same type of rhythm. So roughly every 90 minutes, you have an increase and a decrease in energy. And there's a lot of, we don't have to go on all the science behind it, but one of the things I suggest to folks is to work in 90-minute sprints. And then to get, like, time block on your calendar for 90 minutes, I'm going to heads down, go as hard as I can, clear all distractions, and then unplug for 15 to 20 minutes. Let my brain rest. And when I do that, I don't want to focus on my phone. I want to go outside, walk, maybe eat, fold some laundry if you're working from home. If you're at work, just veg. Distract, like, let your brain just kind of go into portrait mode and come out of the Zoom. And then you can get back into it. Now, if you want to be super precise on when these peaks and valleys are, there is an app called Endel, E-N-D-E-L. It leverages the Apple Watch. It was the Apple Watch app of the year, and it uses some really cool technology. You could also, if you just really want to do this, I think 2 hours before you wake up is when your temperature minimum. And you could start going, okay, I wake up at 6, so at 4:30 in the morning or 4 o'clock is my temperature minimum, and then the 90-minute cycles start peaking. I just tell people, nobody has time for that. Just 90 minutes, 20-minute break, 90 minutes. If you can get 3 of those in a day, you are going to be more productive than the average American. And for coaches, maybe in high school, that you're like, I got brief windows of time, or even in college, I got recruiting, I got this. I'm going to focus for 90 minutes, get rid of my phone, maybe have an espresso, grind, and then give yourself a break for 20 minutes, and you will find that you'll be much more productive.
And I think you and I were talking about Andrew Huberman before anybody else was 2 years ago, but you know, the cool thing that you brought up was go outside, let the sunlight hit your eyeballs, because everybody thinks cortisol is a bad thing. You actually need it in the morning, but then also delaying caffeine maybe an hour before you get up, after you get up as well. Those are some habits will probably set your sleep up better at night, correct?
Yeah, so my doctoral work was in sleep, and it's so funny, like, I'm thankful for Andrew because you know, these are things that are like we learned about, and now he has a voice, and he kind of made it popular, and we're like, wow, like, I think a lot of people like myself that are in the world of science, you go, look, let's take this and make it digestible for the average person. But what you're referring to is the number one thing that you can do to set your body up for adapting to stress is anchoring your circadian clock. One of the giants in the field of neuroendocrinology, his name is Bruce McEwen. He wrote some amazing work on this. And that we talked about allostasis and allostatic load. Allostasis is your body is constantly trying to seek a level of homeostasis. It wants to be in the all good zone, right? But stress comes with a cost. It's called allostatic load. And a short-term stress is great. It's how we get stronger. It's how we improve our fitness. It's how we learn a skill. But chronic, low-grade fever of stress is what will debilitate us. And I was going back to the literature, and the number one thing that you can do to anchor your ability to adapt to stress is to anchor your circadian clock. How do you do that? Well, there's several anchors: light, temperature, exercise. Food is one that people really miss out on. So when you wake up in the morning, when the sun comes up, you want to go outside and you want to get at least 5 to 10 minutes of early morning sun exposure. This sounds like a hack. This is not biohacking. This is like legitimate, hardcore science. The light from the sun has a certain intensity. So the light in your house is bright, but it's not nearly as bright as the sun, even with cloud cover. That's a big question I get. Well, I live in the Pacific Northwest. Doesn't matter. It sends a signal to this bundle of neurons above the roof of your mouth called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. It's the circadian pacemaker. The circadian pacemaker sends signals to every cell in your body by increasing temperature and cortisol. It's time to be awake and alert. You want a huge pulse of cortisol. You can also assist this by doing some movement in the morning, by eating food within an hour and a half or so of waking up. That also helps with the circadian, this endogenous rhythm, okay? And I, on the Blueprint recently, I have a podcast coming out with Dr. Michelle Gumm. She's studies the circadian clock genes in the kidney at the University of Florida. And she's like, Eric, we are finding so many preventable diseases are associated with the desynchronization of the circadian clock. The fundamentals. Okay, if you wake up at 5:30 in the morning, that's fine. Turn on the lights wherever you're at. But when the sun comes up, go outside. And this is not very effective through a window. So you're like, oh, I'm looking at the sun through my car window. You literally got to go outside because those car windows are meant to refract, like change the nature of light so it's not as intense. And it kind of cuts out some of the wavelengths. So you're like, I don't have 10 minutes. Well, maybe do 3 or 4 when you're getting your kids up. Maybe you go out and drink some water, bring your kids. Maybe you drop them off at school, roll down the window. Maybe you get to work, hang out in the parking lot. There's a way to get it done. You
do this for 2 or 3 weeks. By the way, every once in a while. I do go outside in the morning, but I do every once in a while, I'll get out of the office and I will step out and look at the sun just because the amount of information that you guys are putting out now, I'm like, okay, I got to get outside. I got to let it, I got to reset.
It's a discipline. Like, you should be doing this multiple times a day. You will feel different. Am I right, Ryan?
Yes, and we talked about that. You know, the convention is a wild schedule for all of us because you got like 20-hour days, but my prep work the whole year allows me to get through that type of stress and not get sick. We have a lot of people that come out of the convention that get the flu, and that happened to me a lot as a coach. I think about it. I always got sick around January, February when I was coaching because it's preseason, it's really stressful, and I don't get sick that anymore around that time. And I think it's because all the prep work that I'm doing.
Ryan, you are 100% correct. What we are trying to do is prepare ourselves for the storm that is to come. You were either heading into adversity or coming out of it. And we know in sports, you are either trained or you are untrained. So the question is, are you preparing yourself, your brain, your body, not only yourself, but your team, to be at your best when the stress is at its highest? And I think if you watch the national championship game in football, granted, Georgia was, they had better players. TCU psychologically was not ready for the moment. Deer in the headlights, you know, and look, congrats. I mean, they did an unbelievable job, but guess what? Georgia was prepared in every single way for the moment. You can look at all sorts of different sports. And one of the things that we didn't get to talk about, which I'd love to talk about right now, is this concept of mental fitness. Because there's 5 pillars to building adaptability. We talked about sleep, mental fitness, nutrition, exercise, and living in community. The scientific literature is very clear that those 5 things not only improve your longevity, but they increase your capacity to adapt to stress. So there's something we call mental fitness, and it's the ability to be consciously present and to process information without bias. It empowers you to respond quickly and rationally to changing circumstances through committed actions rooted in your values. Under pressure, what you want is control. Not control over the situation, but control over yourself, so that you can respond in a way that's aligned with your values, so that you can tap into working memory, the things that you've been training, so you can make that critical decision. I mean, there's probably many times you probably think back to time you interacted with an athlete in a heated moment. You're like, oh, I wish I could take that back.
Lots. Had a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, we all do. Or with a loved one, with your children, or during a game, there was a critical moment and you're like, I knew that and I made the wrong judgment call. It's because your mental fitness, you weren't fit mentally the way that you could be. You know what I'm saying? And it takes training. And so
what are some ways to train mental fitness?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I do feel like meditation is one way that I do. It does help my mental fitness. It allows me to take a better pause before I react. You're still going to get upset. I still get upset at things, but my pause is way better before I react.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with anger. Anger can be a very productive emotion. Have you ever heard of Stephen McKay?
I have not.
You should have him on your
podcast.
That's
why I love talking to you, because you're always firing off resources that I don't have. So I love it.
I had Stephen and Damon West on my show. They wrote the book, The Locker Room. And he has a parable in there about the anger rights. Your coaches would really benefit from that. But I want to tell a story to introduce this concept. There was this guy. There's a guy named Sir Chris Hoy. He's the greatest Olympic cyclist of all time. 6-time Olympic gold medalist. Okay. He is the GOAT. He is the Michael Jordan of cycling. When he talked about what it was like to race in his first Olympic finals, he said it felt like he was going to the gallows. Like he was literally about to be executed. When, you know, there's this lie out there that the best in the world don't feel uncomfortable thoughts, feelings, and emotions. That's a total BS. What Chris said, though, next was really interesting. He then shifted his attention to his hands gripping the steering wheel, his feet in the clips, his butt in the seat. He was now able to go, okay, I feel like I'm about to die. I'm about to throw up. But I'm going to shift my attention to what I have to do right now. And you can train that through something called mindfulness. Now, mindfulness is not this spiritual experience. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with floating. It has everything to do with learning how to control and harness your attention. My friend, Dr. Peter Haberl, is the senior sports psychologist for the U.S. Olympics. And he says, attention is the currency of performance. That is what every elite performer wants to have in the moment, is their attention and control of it. And you can train that through mindfulness. And the way mindfulness works is essentially you're just bringing your focus to some physical sensation. That's one way to do it. A lot of people use the breath. So you would just close your eyes. You don't need a mystical app. Although apps are great, I use some of them. You could literally put a timer on for 10 minutes and close your eyes, and you would just follow your breath. You don't try to manipulate it. You try to notice when it starts, when it pauses, the air coming in and out of your nostrils. And what's going to happen inevitably is your mind is going to wander. That's okay. The key is to notice. And then when you notice, you bring it back. That's when the neuroplasticity occurs, or the brain begins to modify itself and change. And there's a ton of great research out of Amisha Jha's lab at the University of Miami, which demonstrates that consistent engagement in a mindfulness practice improves focus, prevents task switching, prevents mind wandering. Research shows that it improves biomarkers for stress, like improves HRV, improves metabolic blood panels, lowers blood pressure, reduces rumination, or like, you know, like something really bad happens and you kind of go down the rabbit hole and you just can't stop thinking about that.
Well, that's where it's OCD starts. You know, that people start to ruminate and they can't get off that thought. And that's how OCD starts for a lot of people, is they start to ruminate and they can't get out of that loop.
100%. And so, you know, mindfulness is a wonderful tool that you can use to train mental fitness. Another thing you can do.
Wait, hold on. Hey, the five senses are another one. Besides the breathing part, the focusing on the five senses is another way for me to help from a mindfulness standpoint. And then I've mentioned this in one of my talks. For coaches out there, if you want to get started on some of this, do the raisin exercise. If you Google raisin exercise out there, it's a 5-minute script. It will take them about 5 minutes to eat one raisin. That's a great way to teach them mindfulness, but also how what flow state actually is, because it literally takes like 5 minutes to eat one raisin.
So you're doing mindful eating.
Yes. And that's that next start part of it. Like, that's another way to train. Like, technically, you're supposed to take 30 chews in a mouthful of food. You're supposed to chew it 30 times before you swallow a good.
Most people think it's like three.
So, you know, that's another way to train that you don't think about. Okay, when I sit down to eat, take my time, chew my food. That's another way to train mindfulness.
Ryan, you are 100% correct. You can do mindful walking. You can take a shower, and instead of just getting in and out, you can really focus on the sensation of the water running down your body or going through your hair. I wish I had hair to have it go through, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you can use anything. Ryan, I love the fact that you don't just enjoy this stuff. Like, you are deep into it.
I'm in it. 'Cause I need it. You know, we all go through things in life, and you get off the path, and life, that's part of the life journey, is you sign up for that as a human, that's the struggle. So I do try to help myself. This isn't just me telling people. I am living this because it does help me, and I need the help with it.
We all do. My one of my kids is in elementary school. I have three boys, and their teacher is using box breathing with them.
Love it.
And that kind of brings me to my next point, is breath work. And, you know, my company AIM7, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but one of the scientists on our team, Dr. Chris Morris, he helped us build a lot of the IP behind this, but he's also in charge of like finding papers for every single thing that we do to back it up scientifically. He sent me a phenomenal paper. It's in the journal Scientific Reports, like a very rigorous journal. I just got this. It's a meta-analysis of stress and mental health and the effect that breath work has on. So a meta-analysis is like, it was a meta-analysis of randomized control trials. That's like the most rigorous type of study that you can do. And what they found was there was a significant effect on using breath work and your perception of stress. And you're like, well, perception, that's one thing. Research demonstrates that your perception is directly correlated to biologically how you're adapting. So if you were to tell me today that you're like really stressed out and I took cortisol, your cortisol will be elevated. And so it modulates things like heart rate variability, your autonomic nervous system. I mean, these are like your ability to, there's a word called interoception. Have you heard of this, Ryan?
I have not.
The best in the world have great interoception. Like, they're very aware internally of what's happening. Like, the best athletes on the planet are like, they are just so dialed in and in tune to what is going on within their bodies. And it increases interoception because think about what you're doing. You are slowing down everything and focusing on one tiny little spotlight. And so if you've ever heard somebody say, under a stressful moment, hey, just take a deep breath. It's like the worst thing you could possibly do, because the breath actually helps regulate this thing called the autonomic nervous system, which is two parts. There's a gas pedal and there's a brake. The sympathetic is the gas pedal, which is go time. The brake is this rest digest system. And you want to be able to put the brake on, okay? So when you breathe in vigorously or long duration inhales, it actually ramps you up, push the gas pedal down. Long duration exhales actually stimulate a parasympathetic or braking response. So if you find yourself about to go into a meeting with your AD or a difficult parent or a coworker and you're like, I'm starting to feel it, take 2 or 3 minutes. I like to do like a 3-6 or a 4-8, 3 to 4 second inhale, 6 to 7 exhale, 6 to 8 second exhale. And you will start seeing, you'll feel yourself starting to come under control. And then if you've trained awareness and attention, then you can go to those talking points and you can be less emotionally reactive and you can be more present and thoughtful in how you want to act.
And that's a vagus nerve. You know, that's what gets excited. And it's funny because at the convention, I'm texting you, hey, where are you at? You're like, I'm doing my prep work. And I'm like, I'm coming out because I've got to practice too. Like you were getting centered in. I still have to get centered in. Like before every one of those intros for the youth stage, I'm nervous. So I have to go out and practice, get myself under control, and then get back in the room when I get myself under control.
And if you don't feel... I trained an athlete. Her name was Veronica Campbell Brown. I was blessed to work with her for about 13 years. She's an 8-time Olympic medalist, 3-time Olympic gold medalist. In Jamaica, they called her the queen. And I just straight up, I was like, Veronica, she's so like calm, but she's a lion on the track. Like she would just like eat your heart out and then be so regal when it was over with, right? But I asked her, do you feel pressure? She's like, if I don't feel it, I know something's wrong. And to be quite frank, when I showed up to the convention and I'm sitting there getting ready and I see this, I mean, how many people were in that room? 1,500 people?
There's 1,100 seats.
It was crazy. And Hannah's on the stage crushing it, right? And so I start feeling that in my stomach. I'm like, I got to get out. I'm doing my breath work. I'm getting my mind right. I'm embracing the moment. I walk in. I'm ready to go. And then everybody gets up and leaves. It was
hey,
so
she
funny.
Did you a disservice because she invited everybody to the Q&A. So I was like, I wish fine. She hadn't have said that.
It's fine. It was probably 30% of the people. But you know what? That 30% that were there, the Q&A afterwards was amazing. And it was the people that needed to be there in the moment. But it was one of those things that like...
I always go back to Bono's quote from U2. He goes, whether we were playing in front of 15,000 people or 5 people, we were going to give it our all when we went out there.
And I tried to zero in on some people in the audience and just like I was seeing what they were connecting with. And I was changing things on the fly because I could see where their mind was. That's what I love is like our job is to serve, right? Our job is to help. And if it's one little piece and they can walk away, maybe they can use that. I had a coach that has 1,500 kids in his academy and he reached out. He's like, man, the questions were heartbreaking. And it's like, okay, we can actually go out and implement this stuff early on and maybe save some kids' lives, help, you know, them enjoy the game and maybe, and then it heightens what the game can do for you. Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen the Mike Tyson interview. They asked Tyson, he was like, I was scared before every fight I ever had. He goes, I was frightened. Mm-hmm. He goes, walking up to the arena. He goes, I was afraid.
And you know what that does?
Best boxer in the world.
100%. It makes you prepare better. Like, Ryan, you were, man, I'll tell you, you were A-game. I mean, I was super, like, you walk up, you're in your suit, you're in control, you get up there, you do your thing, and I'm like, this guy is a machine.
I was still nervous, though. Like, you can't see it, but I, you know, I had anxiety going on. But again, that's why you have to practice, and you just have to work through it. That's part of... being on that stage is that I think it's just an expectation thing. You have to expect that you're going to get that. But like you said about the queen, like if I don't have that, it's a flat performance. I need that anxiety in my chest, in my stomach. I need it everywhere because if not, it's going to be a flat performance.
Let me ask you this. When you get going though, do you feel like yourself calming down?
Yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah. It's just that initial. It's usually like the first one of the day. But then it does slow down. Once you get into flow state, then it does it slows down.
100%. I recently did I'm an entrepreneur now, and I actually, it was a very public Shark Tank style pitch. I made the national finals for this thing, and it was for something called Dress Up Buttercup. We ended up getting $550,000 in investment in the company. Huge deal, right? I'm in this like, it's like this warehouse setup. It's venture capitalist. Cameras, like the whole thing. I'm in the kitchen of this like amazing area and I'm like, I'm gonna puke. I'm going to throw up, right? But I'm like going back to my training. I've been going over and over and over. I stepped out there and it was like all of a sudden it was just like, and it was on. And it was because I had trained, and you're either trained or untrained. And, you know, there could have been a glitch or a hiccup, but you know what? You because you've trained it, you've built in this capacity for stress. I don't want, and I think you and I are on the same page, we don't want people to think that stress isn't going to be a part of it. You got to train for it so that you can be your best when it matters most.
I think one of the best things we started to do with our players towards the end was, you know, everybody talks about mindfulness and visualization, but they always focus on like the best performance ever. We wanted them to focus on when bad things would happen and then see themselves actually get through when bad things happen.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, high performance is really minimal perturbations from your best. So if you were to draw like a line, and you're like, this is my performance potential right now, and then you were to do kind of like this wave above and below, that wave gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And your lows are not as low, and your high, there's not these, you know, there's going to be exceptional performances, but that becomes more like this, and it becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And that is adaptability. Biological adaptive capacity enables you to train hard and bounce back fast. When you're not adaptive, you have these massive swings. And then there's this thing called preparedness and readiness. Readiness is when you're biologically ready to go. Your body's recovered, ready to go. Preparedness is like the technical, tactical preparedness of the game. If you overvalue the technical, tactical, it will like come at an expense of the readiness part. If you've overvalued the recovery and all that stuff, you won't be prepared. Elite performance is when preparedness and readiness meet. And the more adaptable you are, the closer those things are. Like when teams come out of the woodwork or out of nowhere and they're just like, boom, have this massive performance. It's because typically preparedness and readiness meet. But teams that are able to sustain that over 130 games, over 80 games, whatever your season is, are teams that can keep that those two lines very, very close together.
Hey, a couple other things from your presentation that I made notes on, and that was great for me because I knew we were talking, and we had maybe talked about maybe setting up something before the convention. I was like, hey, I want to listen to your talk first so I can take notes, which was great. But you talked about muscle paralysis with the sleep piece.
Yeah, so when you sleep, there's different ways that sleep aids in physical restoration. One is a release of growth hormone. That's a hormonal neuroendocrine component that helps with tissue restoration. But during parts of REM sleep, you have a blocking of what's called the corticospinal pathways, which leads to basically a total paralysis of the body. What that does is it allows for your muscle tissues to recover because they literally can't twitch. So if you've ever had a dream where you were trying to escape somebody, you didn't feel like you could talk or move, and it was like frightening. Some people have actually woken up during these states and it is like absolutely terrifying. We believe it's for one, tissue restoration and regeneration. And two, like if you have some psychotic dream where you're flying or like you're not like jumping out of your bed and trying to, you know, it's like a protection mechanism. But the body and the brain need plenty of sleep. And I think we talked about the three key things that you need to dial in on. One is duration. It does matter. 7 to 9. And we often overestimate our sleep by about a half an hour. There's what's called a U-shaped relationship between a lot of things like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, longevity, with sleeping less than 7 hours and more than 9 hours. So you need to be in that window. The second thing we talked about regarding sleep, as far as behaviors associated with sleep, is timing matters. Ideally, you're always in bed before you're asleep before midnight. There was a research study done, I mentioned, by the Broad Institute at MIT and Harvard and University of Colorado with over 800,000 people in the UK Biobank. And they found that shifting your sleep back 1 hour resulted in a decrease in major depression by 23%. So like if you're going to bed, we're talking about people that are going to bed like 1 a.m. and you shift it back to 12. If you shifted it back 2 hours, there was almost a 40% reduction in major depression. And when they looked at the difference between those that went to bed late and woke up later, those that went to bed earlier and woke up earlier, was one thing. Those that went to bed earlier and woke up earlier had more early morning sun exposure, which anchors your circadian clock, which kicks off a cascade of hormonal and neurological events that impacts your mood, all these different things. And then the final thing is, so you have duration, 7 to 9. Onset, definitely before midnight, prior to 11 o'clock is ideal. And then consistency. You need a consistent sleep routine every day of the week. And maybe a little bandwidth of 30 to 45 minutes is okay. But if you're inconsistent, if you go to bed a certain way during the week and a different way on the weekend, you'll end up with something called social jet lag, which is, sounds exactly
like
it is.
I love that term. I love it. Because Dr. Michael Bruce talked about it on Michael Gervais' podcast a long time ago. I love that you're bringing that term up, because I love that term.
It's popping up more and more in the literature, the more studies, because sleep now is something people actually want to research. For a while there, it was kind of this mythical thing.
That's why people can't get out of bed on Mondays, because they get off their sleep routine on Friday night and Saturday night, and the Sunday's scary. If you're listening in right now, if you set a consistent going to bedtime and a consistent wake time and keep that through the weekend, you won't get the Sunday scaries.
100%. I actually, like at the convention, I was up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I went to bed at my normal time. First thing I did, it was actually raining. I got up, I went on a walk as far as I could. Sun came out before, you know, I did all the things because I wanted to make sure that I was prepared. And when I came back, I bounced back. So if you're listening to this, 7 to 9 hours, bed definitely before midnight, ideally before 11 p.m. Be consistent with it. If you do those things, if you anchor your circadian clock with sunlight in the morning, that's going to set you up for sleep at night, because it helps impact melatonin levels. It's going to put all, so if all you do is these couple things, and you do it for just a couple weeks and get your kids to do it, it will dramatically change your health.
And you talked about omega-3s too. Is that really one of the supplements that you're recommending?
Yeah, so I'm not a medical doctor. So, you know, please take this as I'm a PhD. I can philosophize, right? So I'm just saying stuff. Research does show that for the glymphatic detoxification of the brain, it does help. Omega-3 marine lipids does help with glymphatic clearance and reduces inflammation. I take 2 to 4 grams a day. There's a couple of supplements. I mean, I've actually pared way back than what I used to do, because the literature is really strong on things like creatine, amazing for global health, brain health. I mean, there's so many amazing things about creatine. It's the most researched supplement ever. I remember back in the early 90s, people were like, it's killing you. And now we have hundreds, if not thousands, of papers, and it's the most safe.
It saved my career, and I still take it.
How did it save your career?
Because I showed up at 142 pounds in college. My freshman year of college, I was 142 pounds. And then that following year, Nebraska football was the first really research that was coming out with creatine. So yeah. I would study anything before I took it. I just kind of wanted to know what I was putting in my body. And reading through the literature, I was like, okay, it makes sense. So I went and got some creatine monohydrate. And I did. I put 15 pounds on my sophomore summer of going into my junior year. People were asking if I was on steroids, which I wasn't, but it was because of creatine. It helped me put on 15 pounds of muscle. Just the recovery, my workouts were way better because I wasn't as sore and just felt better and was able to retain the muscle piece because of it.
100%. And if you want to take creatine, you can do a loading phase, but it's not necessary. If you take, depending on your weight, 3 to 5 grams a day for about 28 days or 21 to 28 days, it's equivalent. Like, you're going to get the same type of increase in the total creatine pool without doing a loading phase, and you just maintain it. Like, the research is so phenomenal. It's for your grandma should be taking creatine. So I take a multivitamin. I take fish oil. I take creatine. I take some collagen for connective tissue, and then vitamin D. But that's about it as far as supplements are concerned. You know, there's some one-off things depending on if people have certain issues, but Yeah, like most people, that is not where you should start.
Well, and there were, you had to fly 38 minutes. Like you try to tell everybody, hey, 38 minutes for this talk. Like, so you know, there were some things.
Next time we'll just focus on one tiny
thing. There were some things you had on the board that you didn't get to, which is I want to talk about. Cause you talked about, you had intermittent fasting up there too, which I don't, my biggest one is I don't eat it after 8 p.m. So I guess technically that would be considered intermittent fasting because I don't have. And that's another thing, too, for anybody out there. If you're struggling and you're lethargic when you get up in the morning, try to stop eating. And this maybe not for athletes, but for adults, because I think it allows your body to digest everything and it gets it out. And I'm way more aware in the morning when I wake up because I don't have any food after 8 p.m. And usually it's by 6 p.m. as I haven't had anything.
Ryan, you should have your own high-performance podcast.
Stop.
So, first of all, intermittent fasting is not a magic bullet.
No.
However, there's some research showing, and most of the studies, I'll be honest, are done in mice. Their life cycles are significantly shorter than humans. So I'm actually having this lady, Dr. Krista Verde, on the show here soon on the Blueprint, and she does a lot of the research in human models. There's things called autophagy that they're saying, oh, it happens. Well, it's mostly in mice. It would take days for us to get to that. Yes. However, alternate day fasting has been shown to improve glymphatic brain clearance. But here's what I would recommend, and you said it. If you want to anchor your circadian clock, light, movement, food in the morning. There was actually a paper that just came out, and I'll try to send it to you. Maybe we can link in the show notes about metabolic dysfunction and eating. Your biggest meal should be in the morning, most calories. Cutting your food off around 6 p.m., it helps people lose weight because they just stop eating. But food is a stress. Think about it. When you eat food, it goes into the digestive system. What's the body having to do? It's having to deal with it. It's having to move blood to the digestive system to break this stuff down. It will increase your heart rate when you're sleeping, and it will decrease something called heart rate variability. I do jujitsu at 6-7 o'clock at night. I used to come home and eat, and then I would look at my data the next morning. I'm like, this is terrible. I stopped eating at night. I have my last meal around 5. I do jujitsu. I bring it all down, and I totally reverse that trend.
And by the way, I mean, right. Not to get gross, but obviously I'm on the toilet in the morning around the same time every day. And but then that's it for me. Like I don't the rest of the day. So like that just shows me like I'm doing the right things for me, and everybody's got to do what's best for them on that. And like, I'm not a medical doctor as well, but it does show me that my body's regulated to the schedule that I'm on.
There's certain, you know, look, we're all biological systems. We have the same design. It's one system. There are certain rules or heuristics you comply to pretty much everybody. And we're finding that you eat later at night, it's going to mess up your sleep. It's going to increase your heart rate. It's going to reduce recovery. So try to cut that meal off by, 6 o'clock.
Hey, you talked about sleep position too, which you couldn't get to, which again, is fascinating for me that you had sleep position on there.
Yeah, this was all going back to that brain detox system. This is kind of some newer research. They're talking about neurodegeneration and how to maximize glymphatic clearance. And the best positioning is on your side, right side. Somehow the positioning where you lie and sleep impacts these paravascular pathways and strain on the nerves. And
where your internal organs are too. Like that's what I've seen when you see pictures of the sleep positioning, it shows where the internal organs are, and it's better for your body to be on the right side because I don't think it puts as much stress on your internal organs on that side.
Could be. I was doing research on this. You probably know more than I do.
Nah, stop.
And it was like, it was just one of these things. Again, if I could find the paper, I'll send it to you. I have it all documented. But I was like, that is really fascinating. If you are somebody that can control and change your position, it's worth looking into.
I was going to ask, this is just a random question for me. Have there ever been any studies done that if you can remember your dreams, that's a positive sign of good brain function?
Not that I know of.
Okay. And that's,
my mom has never remembered a dream. She's like as sharp as a tack.
Okay, perfect.
That's an N of one, but I don't know.
Hey, dive into AIM 7 because this was two years ago. You're just into it. You finally got some angel funding done for it. And I know that was extremely stressful for you. And congratulations, by the way, because that's tremendous.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we just raised about $1.3 million in what's called seed round funding. AIM 7, so all the things that we talked about, right? Building adaptive capacity, all these habits. I wanted to make it accessible to anyone in the world. How do you do that? Wearable devices are everywhere. Over 100 million Americans own a wearable device, an Apple Watch, a Fitbit, a Garmin. The problem is these devices show you data, but they don't tell you precisely how to use it to look, feel, and perform better. So what AIM 7 is it's the recommendation engine. We give you daily recommendations for your mind, your body, and your recovery to improve adaptive capacity. After 7 days, we analyze all your data and we're like, hey, Ryan, here's the one area that you need to focus on right now because you're a busy guy. You don't have hours every day. This product is built for busy people. Here's what you need to focus on. Yeah, see, these devices show you data, but they don't tell you precisely how to use the information to look, feel, and perform better. So it's like, oh, you walk 6,000 steps. Well, great. Like, what do I do with that? Yes. And so what AIM 7 is we're that daily recommendation engine for busy people. We give you daily personalized recommendations for your mind, body, and recovery to build adaptive capacity. We're actually teaching this in the app. And then after 7 days, we analyze your data and we're like, hey, Ryan, you're a busy guy. We noticed that your exercise is on point. Your sleep is okay, but you're doing nothing in the mental fitness area. So we're going to create a small, tiny goal, and then we're going to send you the tools. And then as a coach, you're going to love this. We unlock a library. It's a masterclass for health and human performance from the best in the world. Dr. Peter Haberl, senior sports psychologist, is teaching on mental performance. I'm in there teaching on sleep. Dr. Morris is in there. We got, and it's going to keep growing, right? But the cool thing is like from a body perspective, let's say you do 5 different types of exercise. You like to do the elliptical, you do some weightlifting, you walk, maybe you do some yoga and stretching, whatever. We'll say, hey, based off of how your body is adapting to stress today, you should do this one. You should get on the elliptical for 25 minutes and stay in this specific heart rate zone because that's what your body can adapt to. We can assess your current psychological state. We're like, hey, Ryan, your mood is down right now and we can tell you're unfocused. So we want you to do this breath work tool and we give you the tool and we want you to do this 3-minute gratitude intervention. Then we look at your sleep and we'll be like, hey, you know, all the things that we talked about, we'll make recommendations to start moving you into those ideal states. And so if you're a busy person, you don't have a lot of time, but you have a wearable and you want to build adaptive capacity, this is the product for you.
If somebody wants to get on the beta, how can they do that?
Yeah, so we got about 2,000 people on our waiting list. We're about to roll this out into what's called private beta. So it will not be in the App Store. It's going to be a high touch white glove experience with Zoom meetings with me and my team. We'll offer that once a week because we want to really help coach people up. But if you go to aim7.com, AIM7.com, and you sign up, and there's a part in there where you say, how did you hear about us? If you said that you heard about AIM 7 through the ABCA, we will move you right up to the front of the line. And we're going to have this thing out in, you know, latest mid-February. And we're really excited. This has been 2 years in the making. I will tell you this. We did an alpha test, 350 people. The average user in their first month between last November and May had a almost 30% reduction in stress in the first month. Their sleep improved, their mood improved, their motivation improved, which was wild. And they did almost 30 or 35% more workouts. So we were actually able to get people to have less stress, exercise more, and sleep better in 1 month. It's wild.
Hey, from a content standpoint, does it take you longer to put out Instagram or TikToks?
I got rid of TikTok.
Did you?
Because you were just for, I mean, focus, energy, like I'm, you know, doubling down on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And that's where people that we're trying to serve are living, especially on like Twitter space is even more like we're finding a lot of the best, I mean, the people that really get dialed into this. But yeah,
we had so much one-off like drill stuff that we couldn't use that I was like, okay, that's an avenue where we can put some of this one-off stuff that we haven't been able to use. And so it's been beneficial for me just because it's been easier to put off, you know, 20, 30 second snippets of drill stuff.
It's your visual, right? Like yes. People can look at it. The stuff we're giving. Yes, I do the Instagram. We've got, you know, I got quite a few followers. I think like almost 30,000 across these platforms. But Twitter, I'm finding the coaches really like, because it's like, boom, boom, boom. And if you want to read more, go here. And so for this audience, I find that that's kind of the best avenue.
Do you have a recent fail forward moment? You had to answer it 2 years ago. Do you have a recent fail forward moment?
Fail forward?
Yeah, something that you thought was going to sidetrack you, but looking back now is one of the best things that happened to you?
Man, I'll tell you this. I've never been a head coach. Okay? I'm the head coach now. I'm the CEO. And now I understand more than ever that talent is so critical. So when I started this, I went and got the best scientist in the world that could build the recommendation engine, which makes this thing go. That is a market differentiator. There's no, we have the best of the best. So it'd be like, I got the hitting coach. He's the guru, right? But I also need a fielding coach. I need a pitching coach, you know, and some of the engineering pieces, I didn't have the requisite skill and background to suss certain things out. And we have now, I got an amazing front end engineer from the Byers Institute at Stanford. Like, he's crushing it. And we had to fill in some of these roles. And so some of these things that I thought in the moment, like, oh my gosh, this is going to crush us. It's turned out that like those were learning experiences. And now I have a model for how to hire these different things. So somebody told me recently, entrepreneurism, it's the hardest thing by far that I've ever done in my life. It's not like you walk in with a budget. It is literally from ground zero. And if you're going to make it, you got to figure out a way to raise money or earn it quickly or you're out. And you're going from one valley to the next. And so when you hit the peak, you better celebrate it, because it's like this.
That's
and
part
so,
of savoring the moment too. When you look at longevity and gratitude, I don't think we as human beings do that, because our brain is predisposed to scan the environment for things that maybe harm us. So I think we just skip past like when it's time to actually celebrate those wins. I don't think we do that enough as human beings.
Amen. 100%. So I've learned, mentors are like, Eric, you did a good job, man. You need to recognize that. And so, yes, Ryan, I'm wholeheartedly with you. And I just want to tell you, thank you for having me on. Like, having these conversations with you is just amazing. And I think the folks listening should be very thankful to have you as a guy that's curating knowledge and resources for them, because I know that you really do a good job of trying to find reliable information. So you're crushing it, and I'm a big fan of the ABCA.
Appreciate it. Hey, one thing before I let you go. Any other evening or morning routines maybe that we didn't get a chance to discuss that would help?
You know, evening, I would say making
sure an alarm to go to bed. I mean, the sleep set an alarm to go to bed. The sleep hygiene piece is real.
When the sun comes up, view light. When the sun goes down, turn the lights down in your house. I think, you know, I could come back in the future and we could talk about the exercise piece, the nutrition piece, and the community piece to adaptive capacity.
And that's what this month is, because we kind of have you on. We'll have a nutritionist on. We'll have a strength coach. I love our January episodes. They've always been some of my favorite ones, because it's the four optimal foundations of, you know, four foundations of optimal living. That's really what our January is, because, you know, if you're a good coach, you've spent all this time in the fall and getting ready. Now's not the time to change how you're teaching, hitting, or pitching, but all of this stuff you could implement and make changes with right now.
Pick one. Just that, and that's something I've learned and I've built into AIM 7 is like, you can do all these things, and that's why we assess and pick one. Listen to all four of these episodes. Listen to the experts that come on that are trustworthy and reliable and go, this is the one I'm most efficient on, and then start there and then build the bandwidth and then go, okay, now I'm going to stabilize this and add the next chunk.
Because that's why only 8% of New Year's resolutions make it the entire year, because people drink from the fire hose on trying to make 8 million changes. So
January 20th is quitting day.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Everybody will quit.
I've learned so much from you. I'm going to add that in. January 20th is quitting day.
It is. Look at Twitter. January. I've already done it. I've already got the post because the research shows that January 20th is when people quit.
Yeah. Dr. Corum, thanks for jumping on me. I love talking to you all the time, man. This has been great. I like it. We have a friendship now, so I'm so happy that we've developed this relationship. It's awesome.
Amen. I consider you a brother. I'm very thankful for you, and this organization should be very thankful for you. Like, you do a wonderful job, and you guys are leading the way, so... You know, if I can ever be a resource to anybody listening, if I can be a value add, please just reach out.
And add the blueprint into my audience, add the blueprint into your listening with Dr. Corum, because he's got some great guests on.
Thank you so much.
Got it. I was pumped when Dr. Corum wanted to do another podcast because we left a lot on the table in our talk in 2021. The research on sleep is continuing to evolve, so we will always have new things to discuss. I also can't thank him enough for presenting on our youth stage in Nashville. We're in a mental and physical health crisis in the United States, and lack of quality sleep has a lot to do with that. Getting enough sleep really is a superpower, and so I hope this episode will be a springboard for you to have a great 2023. Thanks again to Jim Richardson, John Litchfield, Zach Hale, and Matt West in the ABCA office for all their help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org. Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok @CoachB_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.